My tongue speaks so they will know, giving voice to the legacy that has come before. Sojourner, Ida, Dorothy, Mary, Ella, Maya Angelou, others left out of history books, many refusing to, denying my humanity, but I stand and demand. From birthing of a civilization to nurturing a nation, we've been right here. I breast the comfort of men and suckling babies. How dare they not see me? Strength, genius, and beauty. I give voice to this beautiful struggle to shine and bring forth the light, staking claim to our birthright and inheritance of this earth, an overflow of compassion and justice. Using my voice to tell the children, telling the stories of black excellence, Africans, speaking truth to power, if only for 1 hour, they will stop and know that. My tongue speaks so they will know that. Ain't I a woman?
This is Voices of Advocacy Radio with your host, Lakeisha Gray Sewell, showcasing leading activists, community servants, and entrepreneurs. You are now tuned in to truth, community passion, and amplified legacy. Can you hear it? It's Voices of Advocacy Radio.
It is always good to be on Voices of Advocacy Radio, bringing yet another powerful representative from our community, one who is just a joy for me, and then also to see the work and the upliftment that she's doing for the African diaspora and all those around her. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to Voices of Advocacy Radio, Apresha D. Faulkner. She is the founder and CEO of Global Strategists Association. GSA works to increase global engagement among blacks in the African diaspora. In August of 2016, GSA launched its Global Fellows Program. The inaugural class includes Dr. Amara Inya, Cachet Sanders, and Emil Cambry Jr. GSA has hosted several thought-provoking events designed to increase dialogue and engage thought leaders of color on today's most pressing global issues. Apresha's professional experience includes work for financial institutions such as BMO, Bank of America, J.P. Morgan Chase, and prior to founding Global Strategists Association, Apresha spent several years in the association management field. She is a greatly sought-after leader and speaker, a leader and advisor. She participated in a Festival of Thinkers conference in Abu Dhabi, UAE. She has spoken on leadership at leading institutions, led and advised an automatic campaign, and most recently, she is a regular commentator on a newly established program on WJOU titled The Millennials. Apresha is a native Chicagoan who graduated from Kennedy King College with an associate's in political science and later studied political science and international affairs at George Washington University in Washington, D.C. and Chicago State University. She currently serves on the board of directors for Kids Off the Block, a youth-based organization that works with underserved youth to offer alternatives to gangs and drugs. This organization was started by her mom, a top 10 CNN hero, Diane Latica. So, Apresha, that is a wonderful, most illustrious and esteemed bio.
I especially love
that, you know, we are mature women. Yes, we are, but we are definitely still youthful and young. And so it is always a joy for me to see my peers who have accomplished great things and who are in the midst and really right at that cusp of still rising in their careers. And so making new innovative front ways in our career. So hats off to you. You already know how much I admire you and honor you. And it is because of that I wanted to have you on with so that other people can hear from you. Specifically, as we are in this new global, and I won't say new, I guess it's new to a lot of people and really to those of us who haven't been at the forefront or in the midst of global affairs. But you, with your background in political science and your background in global engagement, I just want to know what inspired you to start this work that you do.
Sure. Well, first, let me say thank you so much, Lakeisha, for having me on. It's been an honor to connect with you and work with you. And I'm sure sooner sooner rather than later. We'll talk about our recently established partnership, so I'm excited about that.
Mm-hmm.
But getting into what sparked GSA was, I, as mentioned in my bio, I went to school in D.C., and being a native Chicagoan, I feel like there is a perspective that Chicagoans have that can be limited if you don't get outside of the city, and that is that Chicago is very segregated, and so oftentimes you tend to think that most communities outside of the state of Illinois kind of look like ours, whereas you mostly see people of your own kind. And so when I moved to D.C., it was just a plethora of nationalities and people from different cultures. I have friends that I met in college from Eritrea and Ethiopia and Kenya and Shanghai and just Thai. It was just all these amazing people, kind of like D.C. is kind of like a mini U.N. It's people from everywhere, all around the world, in the capital. And being there, I noticed that there was a lack of global engagement with people specifically who were within the African diaspora and not necessarily settled on the continent. And so I began to kind of wonder and inquire, and I did a lot of international volunteerism. When I lived in D.C., me and a couple of friends, we would always show up at global conferences. We would volunteer our services and our time. And we weren't necessarily in the audience. Oftentimes it was one or two people of color, and we were those people. And so I found out that there was some challenges there. And so after asking questions, I realized, well, I could keep asking questions and trying to convince people that, you know, African Americans or Afro-Brazilian are global, or I could start something that would answer this question and be a solution to what I feel is a problem. And so after moving back home, and I decided, hey, what better time to start something than now? And that's kind of how GSA was formed, just out of a desire to be a part of the discussions that I felt like people were not targeting our demographic for, and that's foreign policy and national security and international markets and economics and things that I feel other communities are engaged in that we just weren't having those conversations.
And that's a powerful observation, but even all of more powerful is the fact that you actually, as you said, created what you wanted to see. You created the platform that allows for those voices and that representation of people who look like us and who come from where we come from and spaces that's identical to it, to have those, to have input in those rooms. So as you said, you were talking about our partnership, which we absolutely will talk about, but I wanted to also get into that, like when we show up in those rooms, you know, those conferences that are not always filled with our representation, when we do show up in those rooms, why do you think it's so important for us to bring our perspective, but also the exchange that we get in those rooms?
Right. So that's a great question. So attending spaces where there are global conferences and discussion around global solutions to, you know, international problems, I think is one aspect. So just kind of being present and showing up, that's one space. The other space is where policy is determined kind of at the global level, and there are so many institutions that are responsible for driving policy at the local level around the world for communities of color. And so you have institutions, you know, like the United Nations or, you know, the World Bank or the International Monetary Fund. And what I have found in just being in a lot of these circles and attending a lot of events and kind of knowing some of the people who are at the top is that we are not at the policy level. So part of it is attending the conference. The other part is being in the room where decisions are happening and so and where policy is kind of formulated and the idea is crafted. And so for us, for GSA, especially for me, it's kind of like taking our people who are in the field and giving them the platform and making sure that the unique experiences that they have as a person of color is seen as a plus, as an asset, as opposed to a negative. And so I think that in the field of foreign policy and global affairs, what predominantly white, middle-aged, Harvard-educated men, that a person of color has a very unique trajectory that lends itself to being able to help formulate policy for people, you know, who are local, who have similar challenges. And so I think that's one part. And so that's why we promote global leadership, this idea that you should be in the room where policies are formed for international markets to drive local economies, to, you know, eradicate, or I don't necessarily believe in the eradication of poverty. I think that's really hard, but to minimize the impact of poverty and definitely tackle generational poverty. And so that's kind of what we think, is that we have a unique experience. Our entire story started with this global movement of, you know, of the slave trade. It's not like we have a choice. And so because of that whole unique history, we are tied to two different continents and, you know, primarily two different worlds. And so we have the luxury of knowing where we originally come from, but also kind of being here in America and taking on what is American history as well. And so I think we haven't been looked at as subject matter experts, and it's up to us to make sure that we get in those rooms and we lend our expertise to these global challenges.
I love that. So the two things you just said that really stuck out to me and really like just sent an alarm off is, one, that we cannot wait to be recognized or identified and defined as an expert or to have our perspective value. We have to do that for ourselves. And then secondly, you said that we didn't have a choice in being global, right? And the unfortunate thing is many of us, even with that, not having that choice but having that connection, still don't recognize, you know, that we are. Can you talk a little bit about that? Like, what are some of the everyday occurrences that show that we're being pulled into this global movement, whether or not we are aware of it or if we want to, whatever it is, we're still in the conversation and we're still in this global happening, if you will.
Right. Well, one, I think, is within the diaspora. You know, a lot of people within the diaspora have community, you know, in their native countries, if they know them, you know, and have families, or, you know, and here too, in whether it's in the States or if, you know, you're Afro-Cuban or Afro, you know, Latino, there's community just all across the globe. So that does a lot. A lot of people think that you just need to have a mindset of travel. It really starts out with community across the globe. I tell people all the time, my friends spread probably across 5 different continents. And so I don't personally know where my ancestry started, you know, being brought here. But I made it my business to make sure that I crafted friendships that will allow me to explore that global desire that I have to be a world citizen. And so that's kind of one part, making sure that you connect with people. And we have that by way of the internet. It's a beautiful thing. I tell people all the time, back when, you know, our parents were coming up and their parents, you didn't have access to the world at your fingertips. Like, you didn't connect with people at the rate that we do today. We can log onto Twitter or to Facebook and we'd be communicating or DMing somebody in, you know, in Laos or Nigeria. And so that's important to really take advantage. That's one way to be a virtual global citizen, is to make sure you connect with people from other sides of the world. The other thing, too, which is just really how we move today, is by way of education, whether we're in a classroom or our work environment. We're always, you know, in a space where somebody is from a different culture or nationality, and we just have to be able to take advantage of the opportunities that lie, you know, within our own spaces. And like I said, either that's a work environment or that's maybe a community event, or even in our neighborhood sometime when people come in. So it's up to us to do that and to really look back on our own trajectory and see how it lends itself. Like, we have unique stories. I tell people all the time, and I don't do it as much because I don't hear it as much, but I used to hear that Black folks wasn't global. And that really used to just make the hairs on the back of my neck. I don't know how you believe that. And what it came down to was that because we weren't being engaged in the conversation, that the perception was that we were not interested. And the truth of the matter is we have no choice but to be interested. So many of our communities and so much of our culture is spanned across the globe that we really have no choice but to understand how this primarily affects us, how this affects the continent, and even at the local level. So it's just a matter of us continuously looking at the opportunities by way of the internet and, like I said, other spaces to be able to contribute.
And so right now, as we talk, there's so much happening in the world right now with the coup in Zimbabwe and the takeover from power from Robert Mugabe. You have what happened in China with the African-American young people going over and getting themselves into some trouble and having to be pardoned by our president or the man in the White House. And there's so much other things that's happening. Where would you say that people who are in the African diaspora, if we're here in America, where would you? What are some of your go-to places to keep in connected and to keep abreast of the global news that's happening?
Right. So hands down, honestly, above anything else, I can guarantee that the first place I'm going to is Twitter.
Okay.
And so I think that people really need to understand the power of Twitter and specifically Black Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Black Twitter is, to me, it's like an encyclopedia. If I hear the rate at which news comes out of Black Twitter, it's so fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
The moment that I heard about the coup that is really not a coup, that could be a coup in Zimbabwe, it was so many, people kind of reporting on the ground in Zimbabwe, Zimbabweans really telling the story in their own voice, which is something we didn't used to get back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's my first go-to place. Other sources that I use, I try to stay away from very right-leaning or left-leaning sources just because I feel like the truth can be distorted, but I tend to follow Reuters, which is an international newspaper organization. After Reuters, I tend to read foreign policy. I literally read foreign policy, every day. Other places like The Guardian, Al Jazeera, even the New York Times and the Washington Post, especially here for home, on global issues, they are very keen. But I also read very local papers that are back on the continent. So I read Ventures Africa, which they focus a lot on small business and innovation and politics. I also read All for Africa, which is a really good source as well. I read Reuters Africa as well. So there are some good papers back on the continent as well.
I'm so glad I asked that question of you because a lot, you mentioned earlier about the eradication of poverty and that whole terminology, right, that whole phrase, we know a lot of what we get information-wise and even what other people get about us in other countries, we know is manufactured a lot of the time. And so I am a proponent for digital storytelling and digital technology. So, for me, when you said Twitter, I'm like, yes, validate that thing. Because it is. It's instantaneous. It puts you in the midst of so many experts. And not just experts because they say they're experts, but people who have really studied and have given years to research in their craft and professors and so many people. Absolutely.
And then, too, just to also piggyback on what you're saying, the one thing that I love about Twitter is that Twitter is very locally driven. And so I am constantly following what's happening in Zimbabwe by locals in on the ground, and they're on Twitter. And I'm also following what's happening in Kenya with the election. I have one of my best friends is Kenyan, so I'm talking to her via WhatsApp. But I'm also following the local Kenyans on the ground to say, hey, this is what's happening with Yura Kenyatta. This is what's happening with Raila Odinga. this is what a presidency is. You know, there's some election issues going on there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I could go to the newspaper or I could go right to the source, which is the people on the ground who are the most impactful. We're over here. And so the Washington Post will write about it, but they're writing about it from a very Western perspective. And it's not necessarily what the locals may feel. And so I feel like Twitter is the best representation of locals on the ground and communities as a whole.
And I will second that, even with in terms of things that's happening in Ghana and the pot, you know, you can get to someone's podcast who is American-based but also have podcasts and guests who are on the ground in Ghana and other places. You know, this is going to take us to our partnership because my first introduction to the desire to take girls to the African continent and this country specifically, Kenya and Nairobi, was Dolores Jordan's organization, the James R. Jordan Foundation that she started, and it was going international. And she was a client of mine. I was doing work, and at that time, she was building the Women's and Children's Wellness Center. Dealing with a lot of the sexual and gender violence that was happening to girls. But also there was a lot of election upheaval at the time. And I think even for us as Americans, we had just pulled out the longtime ambassador to Kenya and replaced him with someone else, and it wasn't such a good welcome things there. The ambassador here had a great relationship, and I don't think the new one was as well. They had to get to know the people, and the people had to get to know them. So that was my first introduction, and I was just mesmerized hearing about the gender violence and the poverty and all the other different things that, for me, in a lot of ways, you found that not everybody is suffering from poverty who is on the continent of Africa. You know, there are variations to all experiences, right? And like you said, it's not until you hear from people who are actually on the ground both ways that they can translate and let you know that this is what's happening, this is the perspective, and this is why. Like, these are the players. So thank you for lifting that up again. So, Apresia, let's talk about our partnership with the work that you do so well, placing adults in these spaces where they can be representatives, where they can learn, where they can be exposed and edified. You have entered a partnership with Girls Like Me last March. So that we could make sure that there are opportunities for girls to also be in these rooms and these classes and these courses and develop and to attend events that your organization hosts. But just on October 11th, we announced the formal partnership or another, I guess I should say, another facet of our partnership, which will allow for us to take girls around the country and sponsor them or create opportunities. And the first opportunity is along with your other partnership with Global Glimpse. I know why I do the work I do with girls, but I want you to talk about, from your positioning, and I have to be very humble and say that it is because of your position, it's because of your partnerships and your relationships that you are able to then extend the opportunity to my organization and to the girls that we serve. Many people are in positions of power and influence. Why is it important to use that position that you have to connect girls to the same work that you are doing for adults?
Yeah, so this is one of the things that I'm super
excited
about.
I just said a mouthful, right?
Yes.
Sorry about that.
No, it's good. It's good. So this is one of the things when we begin to wrap up and look back on 2017, this will definitely be one of the things I am the most proud of, is being able to give organizations and because we're starting out with girls, but also boys too in the future, giving young mm-hmm. people of color an opportunity to go beyond the block and go beyond the country and their city. And so this partnership that we launched with you, I think it's really important to specifically give black youth this opportunity, is because I think that creativity and imagination dies when we're unable to explore. and explore the world beyond the one that we've been introduced to. And I totally, totally believe that, because when I think about when I was younger, all the things that I wanted to do, all the things that I wanted to see, they literally faded away at the time it took me to figure out if I could have that. And so at some point, the older you get, you kind of just let go, you know, if it's not being nurtured, if it's not being fostered. And so in the space that we're in Chicago, where we have all these challenges with, you know, with our young people, with violence and trauma, it seems that some of the things should be just as simple as, let's give these young people a different view. Let's give these young people opportunity and access beyond the locale, beyond, you know, the brown grass, beyond, you know, the fences, and beyond, you know, whatever, the bars and things like that. And so part of that for me is just exposing them to a world, because if you expose them to a global community, I think it also puts responsibility on them to become a global citizen and to see that they have not only a space in the world, but a responsibility to contribute to the betterment of society and the advancement of their local, you know, their local communities. So it's not enough to just be in a community, but you have to literally contribute to that, to your local community as well as your global community. And I wish that I had that, you know, these opportunities when I was younger. I didn't realize that traveling outside of the country was an option until I went to college and there was a study abroad program. Nobody ever said to me in elementary school or in high school, you know, what do you think about going here? Like, that's not pushed in our high school. And of course, there's, you know, varying degrees of reasons why. Everybody has, you know, has an understanding of why. But after the why, after we find out who, you know, who is responsible, who did it, what can we do about it? And so I'm like a firm believer in not trying to figure out who did what. I'm a firm believer in what can I do. And that's kind of from the premise and the basis that I move. Okay, it's a problem. Now what? And so for me, it's just creating this space where I give young people of color opportunity to see the world, you know, bigger and brighter, and see their contributions in it. And I think that's the first place that we start with, creating civic leaders and also global citizens. Like, it's enough to equip them with tools, which I think we have a lot of training here in Chicago, and we have all of the service learning hours. But in what way will we take them out of the spaces that they feel so confined to, so that they can realize that there's a brighter and a bigger world that they're fighting for and to live for? So I think that's probably at the basis of why we started this, and I'm so excited.
And I'm so excited too, and I have my reasons to be, but I don't think I've ever encapsulated it the way you just did when you said basically that your dream can die when you are faced with so many hurdles that it just makes your dream fade away and look so impossible. And so with this experience that we'll have, that young people will have through our partnership, we really are helping them to realize that the dream is dreamable, right? That you don't have to relinquish it. And that is, I mean, I was thinking, you know, we could give them the opportunity to, as you said, you know, put into practice and apply the things that they're learning and give them this great perspective. But I never, that point right there is just so, wow. That's huge. That we, you know, all of us have had dreams that have gone somewhere to die. As Langston Hughes talked about, the dream deferred. And the dream deferred is what our young people are often born into in the city like Chicago, but heck, Baltimore, Detroit, and anywhere else we find ourselves, right? Because of so much of the violence, so much of the disenfranchisement. So I am proud, as you are, to be able to do this thing even more so now. I mean, you know how proud I am. I'm still get choked up when I think about what's going to happen.
Yeah.
This summer, but I think that what you just said is wow, it's powerful. And I'm so glad that you as I said, you are using your influence and your own experience and expertise to bring this next generation with us, because we get opportunities all the time, right? We can position ourselves for that, but I don't see us as a community across the diaspora doing much else beyond our lifetime if we do not empower those who are behind us. So thank you again for that.
Oh, and you're welcome. It's truly our honor.
And I want to also just talk about so for us and these young people that will be going, they're going to Latin America, obviously. We didn't say that earlier, but they'll be in Latin America this year. Your organization will grow and expand their programming. Our programming will expand to have telecommunications and video conferences, and this whole global pen pal program we'll have. And it'll expand to the African continent. But I want to, so our young people who are influenced by our organizations will have those experiences. But I want to talk more about those who are teaching, those who are leading, those who are business owners, Apresia. How do we start to normalize this global conversation amongst those people so that they can see that, okay, if you're saying buy black, let's just use the buy black movement, right? Okay, so buy black can also mean that you can invest and do business with businesses and entrepreneurs who are on the African continent, right? How do we normalize this and bring it down to a base level, but have people include globalization in their everyday lives and conversations and practices?
Yeah, so for one, I think, so I'll talk about the three pillars of GSA, because that's kind of how we try to normalize it and bring it to people where it doesn't seem like it's like a whole new world to them. So our three pillars of being able to kind of navigate in this world and drive global mindsets starts with the idea of global citizenship. And what we mean by global citizenship is understanding that globalization is not, the idea of understanding globalization is not for elite group of people who study foreign affairs in school, in college, or has a degree. It's pretty much understanding that the world is so much more interconnected than it's ever been, and that's by way of your cell phone, that's by way of your PC, of your laptop, is that you can't do anything today without somehow being aware of somebody in a different culture, nationality, and for instance, even if you call to pay a bill sometime, the person that you're talking to is possibly in India or Mumbai, you know, like somewhere outside of where you are.
Mm-hmm.
And that's globalization. If you make a purchase at Walmart, more than likely the tag is going to say made in China or made in Bangladesh, somewhere where, you know, some people have no idea where that is. And so it's at the very basic level that the world is operating globally. And so just to understand what's happening in your local community, where you're getting your coffee, that type of thing, you need to be a global citizen, you know. And that doesn't require a lot at all. It's a little bit of reading. Sometimes it's logging on and watching a video. Oftentimes today, we're watching videos of people in other countries. They're having a great time. A lot of the viral videos from this year was from people outside of America. That's the idea that global citizenship is just happening, and people are excited about learning and seeing something new and fresh. And so that's at the very basic level. The other idea is what you spoke about, which is leaders, civic leaders, business community people, and educators. How do we get them with the buy-in? We get them with the buy-in because we want to prepare ourselves as well as the generation behind us for success. The way that we do that is understanding that global leadership is just a part of our everyday life. It's the idea that you're going to work with somebody who doesn't look like you, who doesn't probably worship like you, comes from where you come from, and you need to have an understanding why it's important that those differences work for you and are advantageous. And that's in the business world, that's in the education world, the more we are connected with people who don't look like us, the better civil servants will be. We'll just be able to understand what our customers, especially if you're a business leader, what our customers want. I did a workshop over the summer for a Google Digital Coach. Her name is Ginger Burkle. She has a phenomenal business called Burke Creative. And I spoke to some of her clients about why Black people don't look at other demographics as possible customers. Like, when was the last time you heard a Black business leader say, I'm looking at the Asian market to see if I can push my product or service? Do you hear that, Lakeisha?
No, never.
And so it's like, why is it that every other community looks at Black people and want our dollars, and we gladly give them, but why can't Black business leaders look at an Asian market, look at a European market, understand foreign direct investment? And so those are opportunities that we're missing out, and that's why we don't, you know, that's why we're limited in our ability to do what it is that we need to do. So it's things like that, especially in global leadership. Then it's the policy, you know, where we hear, you know, people being taken advantage of, local communities being taken advantage of, whether that's rural or urban, by large institutions who are responsible for pushing out global policy. And that's, whether that's the World Health Organization, with what happened with Ebola, who are the people in those rooms? Those people do not look like oftentimes the people that are being impacted and affected. And so it's the idea that if you are in a space where you can leverage your position to help people at the local level, then why not? Why not lend your services to global leadership? Why not do that? So that we can have more people who understand what's happening at the local level, kind of drive policy and initiate policy. So that's the other. And then the last one, like I was mentioning before, is global entrepreneurship. This idea that the people of color have got to start looking at other markets besides our own, just like every other community. We are the only group that only peddles to our own. Everybody else is looking for the Black dollar, and yet we're not looking for the Asian dollar. We're not looking for the European dollar. Why?
And so, in essence, we're just competing amongst ourselves and creating competition amongst ourselves versus competition for our dollars alongside the competition that's coming from other communities and other other entrepreneurs and other businesses. You just said a word right around this small business season.
Yeah, it's like we have to start to think globally minded. We have to look at opportunities that are happening outside of our own market so that we just won't continuously tap out, like we're tapped out. And so I think that's the other thing. And so I don't think we can afford not to think global. I hear people say, too, it's like, well, I'm focused on local, as if you have to choose between the two. Really, they work in harmony. I don't think you can really genuinely impact your local community if you do not understand that a business that comes from China is going to possibly somehow buy a real estate that you won't be able to buy, but you don't know why and you don't understand because you refuse to learn what globalization is and how it can work for you. And so we can't afford to just be local. Like, you can't just be local. You have to be locally invested and globally connected. Like that's what needs to happen. And I think that we have to become very aggressive about understanding what is happening in the world and how can we benefit from it.
And I know you have to go, Apresia, but I just out of that comment or your last statement is, for one thing, you know, choosing to be local, even in a city like Chicago, there's no excuse for us. Well, there is a reason, but I'm saying that we have to go beyond that. Even though the city has been politically designed to be, you know, segregated, there are so many communities and nations and tribes and just so much diversity represented in the city that there's no reason. It's really a sad thing that, you know, for most of us, and this is across the board, not just Black, you know, not just Black Chicagoans, but across the board, we've allowed ourselves to be boxed in and not have, as you said, that spectrum of friends who range from Asian, East Asian to Vietnamese and Filipino to Pakistan, Palestinians and Indians and people from Haiti and Dominican Republic and all these other places that are all here. We have an abundance of those communities and enclaves, right? But how many of us spend time outside of our own neighborhoods with our own friends and our own churches, our own jobs? You've really said something. Appreciate it. And I really want you to answer this last question, and then I will I know you have much to get back to. But I want to know from your perspective, how much different you've heard the case of the young boys who went over for basketball and got into trouble in China for shoplifting. Are you familiar with that story?
Yes, I am.
And so I want to hear from you, just off of the three pillars that you talked about that are germane to GSA, how do you think their experience would have been, how do you think their experience could have been enhanced if global perspective were normalized? And as you said before, if there was some reading done beforehand of culture and different, I mean, you know, stealing is just across the board. bad home training. So that's a given.
Right.
But,
right.
That's an anybody culture, right? You don't need to.
Right.
I think, but I'm using that instance, but so many, even in our military and different places, we go over to other countries without understanding cultural norms, without understanding what they honor and expect from us. So how do you think this trip for our girls this summer, how do you think that they will have the preparation that's going? How do you think that makes a difference?
Right. So first let me say about the three boys. I think that that can be preparation. You know, hey, this is what the Chinese view as, you know, disrespectful. This is the things that they really, you know, hold in high esteem. But I also think that sometimes we just do dumb things, right? I mean, they're young people. It's not like they were an Olympian, which is what happened over the summer. That went to, you know, when the games were in Rio de Janeiro, and then they went and they tried to rock somebody, and then they peed on somebody, and then when they got back here in the States, it was like, oh, this 25-year-old is a little boy. It wasn't like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because you remember that story.
Yeah.
So, you know,
also of all of the military who go over to conflict areas and do the most vile and disrespectful things to the women and the culture in other spaces too. So yes, for years have been hearing these stories.
So some of them, yes. So with Ryan Lochte, that whole Western narrative was really just like, oh, this is just a child and he's just acting out. Okay. 25-year-old, I don't know. But with these young kids, you know, first year of college, we do dumb things. So I'm not sure if even a class on cultural norms from a Chinese perspective would have stopped them from doing dumb things, you know? you're over there and you're a teenager and you're just doing things you shouldn't do, but I'm not sure if they wouldn't have done that here. That's what I mean about doing dumb things. They probably would have done that here as well. So,
Or have done it here.
So it's just the idea of not holding, you know, especially young people of color to a different standard that we would hold like their white counterparts, because Ryan Lochte was not held to that standard. Like he literally beat up somebody and urinated. You know what I mean? And that was, and the way that was portrayed in the media was very different than with these young boys. The other thing is that I don't believe, as, you know, with 45, that he did anything different. And, you know, it was just a matter of course, apologizing to the country, which the boys did, and getting them out of that. The idea that people should be prepared for, you know, what happens in other countries, yes, global education, I think, is very important. But I don't think it stops us from doing dumb things. We're just, young people are going to do dumb things, whether they're in America, they're in China. You know, it's going to happen. That's the part of growing, but it's up to us to educate them on the importance of the trip, on what to take away from the trip, and how can we bring that back to our local community. So with the girls that are going next year, I'm excited to see how they interact with the locals. They'll be doing some service, you know, projects there. Before then, they'll have some global education courses with us. to make sure that they see the benefit in the trip, and also connecting that to their local communities. Because one thing that I believe is that there's, you know, trips for luxury and you know, just enjoying travel, and then there's trips to understand and help frame who you want to be as a global citizen. And for them, I'm excited about that. This will be their first time out of the country, and so it'll help to shape their ideas about what's important to them and, you know, how that can connect them and how many common, you know, things that they have with the locals there. It's not like they're going to, you know, to Mars or something, which oftentimes people feel like, oh, my God, I'm going to like, you know, these are human beings, and a lot of times you have more in common with them than people actually realize.
And so it's like global travel is a truly the foreign word, like alien. It's really like alien, and I'm so glad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's making sure, too, that, hey, these young people probably have the same challenges, if not more. That's the other thing, if not more challenges, you know. And so seeing that as well, so I'm excited for them to look through a different lens and learn about the culture and communities there and see how they can bring back those skills here to Chicago. I want to mention something before I turn it back over to you, which is that on Saturday, I went to one of my friend's house. She is, she's Indian American, and she was having like a small gathering of people from just all different walks of life. It was predominantly Asian, and I was the only Black woman there, but I felt so comfortable. I've known her, and like when we get together, it's nothing but fun. And so when there was a comment made by somebody who kind of, you know, was talking about Chicago and the segregation and how can we work through that. And then somebody unconsciously, I really do believe, and not from a, you know, a bitter place, was like, you know, well, I tell people all the time, I don't hear about the shooting because I just know what neighborhoods not to go to. But somehow that struck me. And so I had to say something.
Of course.
Yeah, and so I said, and this person is a transplant, and many in the room were transplants. Like, they only been here a couple of years. I think the oldest person had been here 20 years, but none of them were from Chicago. And so I had the beauty of being the only person there, born and bred in Chicago, and offering this newly exciting narrative to all of them. I think the shortest person, her term, she had been here 2 years. And so I said to the room, I said, I would like to encourage you guys to see the south and west sides of Chicago, because most of them lived in the West Loop downtown or on the outskirts of the city. And I said, because when you see the city from those, from that perspective, through the lens of people of color, then you won't make statements like that. Because truly there is not a neighborhood that you cannot visit where community will not be community. Are there pockets, you know, and isolated incidents in every community? Yes. But is there a community that is just truly like out at night trying to figure out how much trouble they're going to get in? No. there are people in pockets of communities, you know, that do horrible things, but that's everywhere. And I said, so I would, you know, I encourage every single one. And I, before I got up for the table, I said, I'll take each of you on a tour on the south side. And that is my duty as a citizen. As a citizen of the city and a global citizen, to say, you can go out and do it, or I'll help change your narrative, because I'm going to take you to the communities where you think are very bad places to go.
Wow, Aprista, you just gave me an idea. You know, you not, don't give me no ideas, because we'll be doing it. You just gave me an idea. So, you know, I've talked to you before about our Global Connections programming that we'll be starting in next fall. But you just gave me an idea, and that is to the young people we work with, we can train them to be dolphins, right? And they can be tour guides themselves for that very thing that you just talked about. Aprista, put that on our list. We're doing that.
Yes.
I'm so
yes, it needs to. Yes, it needs to happen. I had a friend come here. And she said, well, what should I see? I said, you should totally see the south side. And I drove her around the entire south side. This is this, this is that, this is, I mean, that's what I do. So I told them about how challenging that narrative was that they were peddling, but, and it wasn't them, it was one individual. But I said, I could even recommend, I'll drive you all around the city, you know, on the south side, so you can get an understanding of just how dangerous that idea is that you're, you know, you're peddling. And they were very open. And so it's things like that that we need to do. Take up the responsibility of introducing people to what is truly community as opposed to all the things that they hear on the news and what they see. And I think that that's what happens locally around the world is that certain communities get a bad rep, and then when people come in, tourists come in, they don't want to go. They don't want to see because they've heard so many bad things.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's up to us, African, you know, people within the African diaspora, to make sure that we don't become part of that narrative.
That's right. And I'm going to let you go. I just want to say that, you know, it's also detrimental because of the stigma and the stereotype that then when our young people go into other communities, then that stigma follows them so that when they come in, people are not as welcoming or they believe people won't be as welcoming. Either way, it hurts the interactions, that the rich interactions that could take place if people didn't embrace these limiting, very destructive and just unfortunate media perceptions and these narratives that are being peddled. And so thank you again. Apresia, I want to say that our organizations, yours, with this opportunity, this partnership with Global Glimpse, and you all are giving a stipend towards the young people's travel. We'll be helping to raise money to send the young people, and then the young people also will be doing their own fundraising. But I want to lift up the opportunity for anyone who is listening to support and join and donate. This airs on November 26th, and then on November 28th, you can definitely be a part of our Giving Tuesday campaign to raise the funds to help send the girls on this travel experience and other programming that we have. But I also want to say, Apresia, that you're in the midst of applications for your fellows program. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, thank you. But two things. Before I get to that, I want to say that last week we had such a big week. Last week we had a new board appointment. And so we appointed Eli Williamson, the co-founder of Leave No Better and Behind. And it's not, I know, I'm so excited. And it's not Global Citizen to the board of GSA. And so I'm excited because we deal a lot with national security. That's just one of the apparatuses of foreign policy. And so he will lend his expertise and business acumen to growing the organization. And he also sits on the Obama Foundation Diversity and Inclusion Council, which is awesome as well. And so, and the Truman Project, who we worked with last year. And so I'm excited to have him join us here to kind of really, you know, continue to do the work that we're doing. And then we open the Global Fellows application. So with the Global Fellows program, we're pretty much looking for people of color, people within the African diaspora that are doing amazing work already, that are looking to increase their platform and dive further into global affairs and the understanding of foreign policy. So if that sounds like you, check us out at gsachicago.org/fellowship and apply. You have until December 6th, 5 p.m., December 6th to apply. There's no application fee, but you do have to do it in one sitting. I say submit your application and, you know, make sure you take your time and complete your essay questions. But if that's you, that's it. And this is not an introductory leadership course. Because somebody mentioned to me they was just starting out, and I said these are actually for people who have been in the field, who already have the position and the expertise, and then we're just going to build upon that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I'm excited for that.
Well, I want to thank you again, Apresia. I want to thank you for founding and creating this space for people to engage globally and to have a bigger connection to the world at large and give and serve from a bigger place. That's what we need, and that is, I believe, that's the pulse of today's climate. It's moving us along, whether we are conscious of it or not. We are all being moved to a global center. And so I thank you for being a guiding force in that. I thank you for bringing our girls along and implementing programming for them. And I hope that anyone who is listening has found some of the gems that I have had and taken away these things, but also have been inspired to place themselves and position themselves into rooms where global conversations are happening, whether or not you believe you have expertise to bring or not, but at least be exposed to it. So again, Apresia, thank you. Visit gsachicago.org for more information on Apresia's organization and to support the work that she's doing. Also, don't forget that you can support the Global Travel Program for our girls this summer by visiting girlslikemeproject.org. Apresia, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Lakeisha. You have a great afternoon.